Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Swim podcasting, swim podcasting.
How's it going? Welcome to Swim Podcast episode number 9. That's obviously a very auspicious and magical number that holds a dear place in my heart. So I was chuffed that there's someone who isn't me on this one is Sam Carter of Architects. No relation. We speak about the new Architects album, All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us, which is out now on Epitaph Records. We also talk a bit about Sea Shepherd and just a bunch of different stuff. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you'll know that it can kind of jump around a bit. And that's the beauty of it. I think it should just be a couple of like-minded people talking about music and art and everything else that kind of goes along with those things. So I hope you enjoy this one. This is Sam Carter.
First off,
cheers.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, don't say that yet.
Imagine that. I'm a fan of the podcast and then my least favourite one's my one.
Yeah, well, that could happen.
Yeah.
Well, first off, it's a weird one as well because we've already, in my other work capacity, we spoke about the album.
Yeah,
and
released it through that as well. The announcement and everything was around that.
Yeah.
So you were the real birthplace of the new record. Yeah?
The conduit.
Yeah, and you were the first person to know that wasn't part of Architects team when you called me in the studio and you were like, "Where are you?" I was like,
nowhere.
I'm in the studio. And you were like, "What? What are you doing in the studio?" I was like, "Yeah, we're in the studio. I didn't tell anyone."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was good as well because
Everyone was like, "Promise me."
I know. And then everybody that would like whenever your name would come up in conversation with people, they'd all be like, "So, yeah, what are they doing? When's their next record?" And I'd be like, "Well, I don't know."
Yeah, give them some time. I think they're just enjoying the downtime.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. So cheers for that.
Yeah.
But and like I said, when we spoke at that point, I was like, the album's raging, and my opinion hasn't changed at all. Mm. But there's so much, you know, I've had a chance to digest it a bit more, there's stuff in it that I find right. It starts off like, I mean, the opening track, Nihilist, right?
Yeah.
Is you have to forgive me if I get titles or quote
fine,
lyrics
yeah.
badly because I got
you listen to a lot of music. It's fine.
I've got a head like a sieve.
Yeah.
That is exactly the vibe of it. But at the same time, and if we're going to go there straight away, there's definite recurring themes in it, which I think have carried through from the last couple records as well. But
yeah.
Like, it just seems like there's real anger about like the lack of empathy that's going on in the world.
Sure.
And the way that that everything's just being milked without any thought or consequence, to the point where it's just like humanity as just a term rather than an actual description and everything that used to encompass. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, that's the vibe I get from it. Is
the album is the sound of five people that have had enough. Like,
yeah.
It's you think back to 2 years ago when we released Lost Forever and nothing's changed. Nothing's changed about the stuff that we were talking about. No, there's no difference in... No one's talking about climate change, making a difference there, and the government's nothing's fucking happening. No one's... there's not been, like, a vast difference in the amount of people eating meat. And there's not been a, like... The whole vibe hasn't changed. It's got worse. Everyone's just... It's just... We're in a horrible place where there's no empathy and no love, and it's... like the line in one of the songs, and there's no love, no empathy, our fellow man is now our enemy. Like, it's such a sad place to be, and the record is angry, and it's the sound of people that have just I just want to grab people and just go like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why are you so horrible? Why can't we all just like why can't we all just get along? Like, it's so easy to hate.
Yeah.
And it's even easier to love. It's so easy to just forgive someone, because that's the easiest thing. It's so nice to just kind of like, I'm sorry about being like that. I'm sorry if I've held a grudge against you. What's the point? We're both on this earth trying to figure this shit out together. Like, we're both equal. What's the point?
Yeah.
And our egos have gone wild. Our ego, as humans, they're gone. You know, they're gone out of control. Yeah. Everyone's trying to be cooler than everyone. Everyone's trying to be better than everyone. And no one looks out for each other.
Yeah, that is something I find horrifying. I look at the way things are. I've said this a few times in different podcasts, but like, the internet, right, in theory, is this opportunity for everyone to be connected to everything, which should be, I mean, that's almost like Godhead. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Right?
Because if everyone was connected to the earth, everyone would be like, wow. This is amazing. So yeah, technically it's connecting the world.
Yeah, imagine being in a time prior to now where you had every single piece of information, every idea, every thought and philosophy at your fingertips, and all it ends up is just like, here's my dinner, this is my cat. Guilty of it, because I've got three cats and I love them.
Yeah, I've got a dog and I'm posting the hell out of it.
Exactly, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But then like, I look at the way people were like, you know, that whole like world star, like while people are just panning the shit out of each other and filming it and laughing, it's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah,
what is that
this,
about?
This is like in a really crazy way. Like, you think back to like gods, I feel like, and we've discussed this recently, like gods were like people that were like enlightened. They were like people that had reached like a state of enlightenment, I think. And they were like the people that everyone loved, and they set a good example, and they brought positivity towards them, and that's why people saw them as like this higher being, because they would like teach people how to love and be kind and do all these like amazing things. And imagine if those people like nowadays could be like, I could send you this information of how you could be a kind person in like a minute. It will be in your house, in your inbox. Like, it wasn't like people looking for someone. All the information's there on how to be a good person.
Yeah.
Everyone knows how to be a good person, but
I mean, you shouldn't.
It's
really
so much cooler to be a badass and not give a fuck, and that's what's sad.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like the nihilism that is just sort of so rampant, and I think it, like, on first listen to the record, it almost feels like it's so angry that it just feels like it's like, this is all fucked, we're done, right?
Yeah,
but. But I definitely think that there's a feeling of hope in there. And to me, like, I was, like Nihilist in particular, it made me think of a couple of things which I wrote down. And one, it just feels like it sounds like a person that's like yearning for want of a better word, like a spiritual identity.
100%, yeah.
But not wanting to do that, find that via like anything that organized sense. Because of dogma and hypocrisy, et cetera, and everything that throws up, because that is like that's one of the worst dividing wedges that exists. So it really made me think of that. But then another thing it made me think of, which was weird because I don't know whether I'd noted this already subconsciously, it made me think of Dylan Thomas. Do not go gentle into that good night, which is weird because then I noted this down and I carry on listening to the album, and then that turns up in the lyrics in Phantom Fear, which was kind of weird. So I couldn't work out whether or not that was just me feeling like I was on the right wavelength, or whether I'd already noted that down sort of somewhere in the back.
Well, I think, I mean, like, Tom is a genius. Like, he's like, writes all the lyrics, writes all the music. Like, I mean, from an early age, I went to shows with Architects and was like massively impressed. You know, I was the kid in the front row that was just in a scrappy hardcore band, and my mind was blown by watching them play. But seeing him evolve, like, as a, not just as a person, but as a songwriter and as like a actual song structurer as well, he is Architects.
Yeah.
The stuff he was coming up with on this record is absolutely mind blowing.
Yeah.
And the stuff like with Dylan Francis, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he snuck that stuff in.
Yeah, it is, because it's like, what is it in the lyrics? Rage Against the Dying of the Light. Is that one of the lyrics?
I chase the dying of the light, I think it is.
Yeah. So that kind of is I guess referencing Dylan Thomas. But which I thought was kind of weird. But now it's interesting that you've said that, because it makes me wonder, like, how did it all, when you were going to see him and you weren't in the band?
Yeah.
Then what happened? Because you were a drummer, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I played drums. Yeah. And I played drums for since I was like 13.
Yeah.
I played for a long time and I loved it, and we were just involved in the same kind of scene towards me joining Architects. I was in a hardcore band and called Nervous Wreck, and we used to play like all dayers with them, and there was, you know, other bands like Turn Cold that turned into Dead Swans, and they would always be playing them, so we were kind of around the same people. And the first time I met Tom and Dan, it was really funny actually. They came to a Nervous Wreck show. We were supporting Down to Nothing at this like really small place in Hove, which is just around the corner where I live now. And I met them outside this church on the corner, and we were actually going to play our release show of All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us in that church, but we couldn't in the end. It was so funny when we turned up. I was like, that's where I met you like 10 years ago. You were both sat there drinking White Lightning, and I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, oh cool, you're an Architects, I really love your band. And that was it. That was like our passing moment. And then I sort of knew Ali because we worked on the same street. I worked in Holland and Barrett, and he worked in a clothes shop down the road. And my band, I started a band called Monuments, and we kind of sounded like Hopesful, and it was the first band where I'd started singing, because I was like, I'm bored of sitting at the back, like I want to be a front man. I've got like all this energy, I need to get up there instead of like ruining bands by playing like 30-second long fills and the guitarist turned around being like, what the fuck are you doing? So I was like, I started this band and it sounded like Hopesful, and we got like local support for Bring Me the Horizon at the Concord. And it was like a big deal because I didn't know Bring Me at that point, and it was when, you know, Count Your Blessings was just coming out, and it was like that was a big record in the scene.
Yeah.
So the boys came down because they had already toured with Bring Me, and then they saw our band because one of the guitarists in Monuments was Architects' merch guy, and then the day after, like, I remember them being like, your band was amazing, you were really good, and I remember being like, whoa, it's the first time that they'd spoken to me properly. And then the day after, they went for a meeting with Matt, their old singer, and he quit. And then they just said to Ali, they were like, you need to speak to Sam tomorrow. So he came into my work and was like, are you free on your lunch break? Can we have a talk? I want
some banana chips.
Yeah, I want some banana chips. And I need a veggie sausage roll. But then he was like, can you come and have a talk? And I was like, yeah, of course. I was like, what is it? He was like, I don't have time to explain. I've got to rush back. So I was like, the fuck is going on? I saw them like yesterday. Like, this is weird. And I went there and I was like nervous, because like, I don't know, they were I kind of knew Ali loosely, but still I was like, you know, I would be at their shows.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, Matt's quit the band. Do you want to try out? And the first thing I said was, I just went, I can't play drums like that, dude. I was like, I can't do double kick stuff. I was like, there's no way I can try out. And he was like, no, idiot. He was like, Matt's the singer. I was like, oh yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, when do you need me? Like, so blasé. Like, oh, I've got this. I can fill those shoes. And then I went for a band practice and was a bit cocky in the band practice and couldn't quite get my head around the time signatures. But I think I said something really arrogant at the end of the practice, like, so I'm in, yeah. And they were just, and they still rinse me for it now.
Amazing. Yeah. And do you like? That was a long time ago, and since then you've put out a ton of records toward the world and stuff, but do you still like have that ability to get in that, like, almost like where you can step away from it for a second and view it
and go back to where it was
and view it as a fan of the band?
Because I think the thing is with Architects is, like, I think it's rare. I think it's just like, it's actually just five friends, like, that band practice has just got out of hand. Like, it is just crazy. We're not like five rock stars at all. Like, we're there's no sense of arrogance in any of us. I don't truly think any of us think we're a big deal. So I think, like, we're always very grounded. Just like, we know what's going on. We're just really grateful to do it. So there's always times where we take a step back, because I feel like every day is like a joke for me. Like, I don't understand it. I really, really, and there's been times where I've really struggled to understand it, because it's, I like pinch myself, because I'm like, how am I here now talking to you about our new record? Like, how is like, you know, I've liked A when I was a kid, you know, like what's like, so like bit moments like that where you're like, life is weird, like, yeah, this is cool.
It is, and it just seems like in the last couple of years as well, with the last couple of releases, and I think when this one drops, it's going to be a whole new world as well, because it just seems like the band is just, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's people have finally come round a bit more. The band is progressing constantly, which is obviously something to do with it, but it just seems like all of a sudden everyone's gone, oh yeah.
Oh yeah,
I get it. They were all.
Yeah.
You know, and there was and that's not to say that there wasn't that crowd already, because you had a really like fervent and dedicated crowd, but it just seems like that suddenly seems to be blowing up now.
Yeah.
Without wanting to jinx anything.
No, off of back of Lost Forever, like we, you know what, it was 100 days, and like before we did that tour, we were like moany, like miserable, always looking around at other people. Like, we were known as the band that moaned. We were known as that band that we would just joke about other bands, and it was like our party trick. Like,
yeah,
we would be like, why are they doing that venue and why are we doing this venue, and had like our tails up, and we're like just fed up. But then on that tour, we kind of realized how it was a real moment of like, Adam was with us, like it was the first time he toured with us, and we all just got super close. We were traveling every day for 100 days, playing in the middle of nowhere, and going into shows with no expectations, and then coming out of shows like near tears, like Kuala Lumpur. It's in the DVD. We were like, this is going to be the worst show we've ever played. It's in the middle of a mall, in a room. No one's going to come. No one likes our band here. What's the point? Why are we here?
Yeah.
Played the show, it was one of the best shows we've ever played. Only like 400 kids, but every person in that room knew the words, and it were like, what in Kuala Lumpur? Like, and the whole tour was like that every night. So after a while we were like, no, let's stop being negative and start being like, tonight's going to be cool, this venue's amazing. Like, and then that sort of transformed architects and our outlook and our like, hang on a minute, we've been doing this for, at that point it was like 7 to 8 years or something, and we're best friends, we travel the world together, people come and see our shows, people really like our band, let's go and do a good record, let's go and like be architects and just love it, because you never know when it's going to stop.
Yeah.
So that attitude change, I think, is responsible for people kind of going like, oh, now they get it, now they realize like, yeah, you're a good band, but now you actually appreciate it, now we're going to support you, you know. Not that people knew that, but I feel like I don't magnetism know. Was involved.
Yeah, yeah, okay,
there, like.
I don't think that would have been like a conscious voiced thing, but maybe that is the way. In. Yeah, and it makes me think of the album, because like the sample of Alan Watts on Memento Mori, that's exactly what it seems like happened.
Yeah, we just stopped like, fighting it.
Stopped fighting with it and just swam with the stream rather than against it. And then it was like an blocking.
Yeah, stopped comparing ourselves to other people and just realised how fortunate we were and how like much we loved it and how we shouldn't moan about something that we loved.
Because... Especially when, you know, if we're being honest, that is something that used to blow my mind a bit, because you were such a distinct, well, you are such a distinctive band. And it's almost silly to compare one thing to another thing when those two things are intrinsically different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think we realized that we really loved it, and it wasn't just saying that we loved it anymore. It wasn't like just being like, it got to the point where it was like, no, I'm not going to moan about going on tour. Why would I moan about going on tour? I've waited my whole life to do this. What an incredible moment, that step out the door of like, I don't know what's going to happen for the next 3 weeks, but I'm going to be here and here, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, because you know that is one of the things, isn't it? It's a tough thing for people that aren't in bands and haven't played in bands to even get their head around, because it can seem a bit like, you know, you read all this stuff where it's like people are like, oh, we're going on tour and we've been away for this amount of time and blah blah blah, and it sucks and we're in a bus, and then you've got to suddenly take a step aside into the shoes of like of yourself when you were 13, 14 and you were looking at bands, and it would be like, whoa, you're going on tour for 3 weeks, you're going to tour the world, you're going to see Japan, you're going to see Australia, you're going to meet people that are from a totally different culture that are coming to see your band play your music.
It's crazy.
And you know, but then again, the flip side is It's not a fucking easy ride. Like going away from home, it sounds like, well, you're going on an adventure. And a lot of people seem to think that, something that I found when I was touring a lot more when I was younger was that, you know, I'd reel off a list of places I was going to go to when one of my mates that wasn't in a band or one of my family.
Where are you off to?
Yeah, and you'd go, oh, I'm going here. And it blows their mind and they're like, wow. Oh,
lucky man, you get to see all this, get to see that.
But invariably what would happen was, unless you made a concerted effort to get up in the morning, get off your bus, mm-hmm. and hail a cab, you're seeing your bunk, you're seeing the venue.
Very true.
If you're lucky, you might see somebody's living room floor that you're keeping on or a hotel room.
Yeah.
And then you're back in the bus or a van or whatever, whichever way it is you're touring, you know. And unless you make that concerted effort, because, you know, it is a gift. Yeah. Like, when you think about it, like, who at the ages when we're first discovering music thinks, oh, I'm going to go to the other side of the planet.
Yeah, I'm going to go
and see this stuff. And
it's really wild. I think the biggest example for me was, like, you know, I grew up listening to bands and buying the Warped Tour sampler. Like, that was my dream as a kid, was to do Warped Tour. When I was in school, all I would say is, one day I'm going to be on the Warped Tour. And then to be on it, and it was amazing, actually. It was around that time, around that 100 days time, where there were so many bands that have moaned to us about Warped Tour, like, it's the hardest tour ever, you're going to hate it. Like, trust me, you Architects, you moan a lot. You're going to really hate it.
It's going to be the worst time.
Yeah, and then we got on it, and it was the best tour we've ever done.
Yeah.
I love it. I loved everything about it. I loved the social aspect of barbecues every day, drinks with your friends. You know, we were there with Bring Me and While She Sleeps, and it was a lot of British bands. But regardless of that, you know, we made best friends with Let Live that summer. We made Amity Affliction got closer with us than ever. And you just hang out with people that you wouldn't normally hang out with, and you play shows at the end of the day. It's like summer camp for bands. Like,
yeah, everybody. And at the end of it, I was
like, how is anyone moaning about this? And then I was like, hang on a minute, how is anyone moaning about being in a band? How are we're moaning about being in a band? And then being like, okay, right, this has to stop.
Yeah, there's better things to moan about.
God, yeah. There's a lot more going on than, oh, we don't have...
Oh, where's my PDs?
Yeah, where's my kale chips? Like, what the hell is going on?
Which, you know, and I think...
You know, kale chips are good, yeah.
Yeah, they are great. Yeah. Especially the ones with the wasabi thing. Mm. But the thing is, it's like, going back to the album, that's everything that is all the stuff that needs to be moaned about and people need to be made aware of.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, how did you come to that conclusion that this is what the songs were going to be? It sounds like a weird question in a way. It's not like everyone sits at a board meeting rustling papers going, we need to write a song that's socially conscious and is commenting on the amount of pollution in the sea.
Yeah, well, I think
I guess those things, you know, a song is the creation of the people that make it and the things that those people are into is what goes into the song and what makes a band the way it is.
Well, like, we hang out every day. Like, we, even when we're not on tour, we hang out. I've literally probably seen Ali every day for the last 10 years. He lives around the corner from me. Like, you know, like, we see each other pretty much every day, and we'll go for coffee, or if we're not on tour, we're doing press in London, or we hang out with each other because we love each other's company. Like, we are best friends. So these things that we talk about are always discussed. Like, if something comes up about climate change, one of us will be like, hey, did you guys hear this? Like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio's just talked about it. Yeah. Like, this is big news. Or like, hey, have you guys just heard about this part of the rainforest, the Amazon rainforest that's just been, like, 2 miles has just been smashed down for palm oil, you know? So we're there with all these discussions talking about it. So I think after a while, you're kind of like, we're still talking about this. Like, this is still happening, right? We live in a world where all this change is available for us to make the difference. We can bring in renewable energy. We can do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not happening.
Yeah.
And everyone's getting angrier. Everyone's egos are getting out of control. This is not the band. This is, like, people in real life.
Yeah.
Being in a band's not real life. It's pretend, right? So it inevitably was going to get to that point where it's like, well, this is what's being discussed by us. This is what we feel really needs to be discussed. And... when you actually know the stuff that we're talking about, it's actually quite enlightening because you're not walking around blindfolded. You know how fortunate you are to be here. You know how lucky you are to be on this planet, and you want to fight for it because you feel like no one else is.
Yeah.
But there are amazing people that are fighting for it, and And I think it's just, the record is the sound of just like grabbing someone and just being like, come on, like you're so close to making the change, just make the change.
Do you think that people like that come to shows, what do you think the proportion of people is that are like, fuck, I'm stoked on this riff, like, yeah. and then what proportion is, fuck, I'm stoked on this riff, and shit, yeah, this is like a really interesting topic that I'm going to look up and actually get involved in some way.
Well, we were involved in a discussion about this the other day where Dan was saying, like, when I listened to Rage Against the Machine and I was hearing Fuck You and Do You Tell Me, he was like, I didn't think about them being like Rage Against the System. I thought about, I'm singing that to my mum, like, fuck you, I'm not going to tidy my room, you know, like,
yeah.
So like, I do wonder like how much of our crowd understands it, but we see the change, like, you know.
But then surely any proportion is better than none.
For sure. I think we see drastically more than most bands, like at our signings or at our shows, like 50% of the kids there are wearing Sea Shepherd t-shirts,
yeah.
or are wearing like Animal Liberation t-shirts, or you know, they're there wearing like Rouse, Step Up, like Community t-shirts, you know, yeah. Like, and you're like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I'm more stoked to see a kid in a Sea Shepherd t-shirt than an Architects t-shirt, because I'm like, I know that money's going somewhere good. Like, I know it's coming from a good place. And you can tell, like, I talk a lot on stage and I get lost in the moment, because there's big atmospheres and big feelings and big vibes going around those rooms where you can really feel like you can connect with people. Some nights I don't, because sometimes I feel like there isn't that connection there, because I just go rambling. Like, I'm gone for like 4 minutes and they'll be just like ringing out their guitars, like, when is he gonna stop? Like, what is he saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you feel that connection, you feel a whole room react and clap, and you're like, yes, I've done it, I've made a connection tonight, and I've managed to get the crowd to go like, holy shit, I am powerful, I can love myself enough to go and love the universe and love other people.
Yeah.
And some nights you're like, guys, do you not hear what I just said? Like, we can make a fucking difference. Like, and the crowd is quiet, you know, like, just but wait. It's important. You have to gauge the night and gauge the vibe. But I think a lot of people understand where we're coming from. I think especially newer people getting into the band.
Yeah, I think, well, because I think people are now getting into the band because of that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think that there's an awareness now that it is a band that has really strong convictions about a series of subjects, so
yeah.
People that also feel that those subjects resonate with them are suddenly drawn towards it,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite things about Architects is the connections that we see as just as a band, like the connections that we've made with people that like our band that now work for Sea Shepherd, like work on the boats, and have become friends of mine, and also other people that come to the shows and meet at the Sea Shepherd table, or like have a like-minded discussion about politics, or what? Feel like they've got a mate that maybe their other mates don't, their friends at home probably like, what are you on about? Stop talking about this stuff. And they come to an Architect show and they finally can be like, I feel like this, I feel like this. And the kid next to them was like, yo, I feel exactly the same.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting thing, because I wondered, like, how did the Sea Shepherd thing come about? When did you get into that? I mean, as a concept, I mean, it makes perfect sense, mm-hmm. obviously.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, when did you actually realise that the organisation existed and that it was something that you could get involved in?
Mm. And it was, it was on 100 days, I think. It was on 100 days.
That's tour, quite a transformative again. Period.
Yeah, we were on that tour and... we were going to Australia. I remember flying from one of the places we were in to go to Australia, and there was a documentary on the plane that I watched called Shark Water, which was just an amazing documentary, and it just really grabbed me. And you know, it was about how horrible humans are to sharks, and definning, and all these crazy things. And in the middle of the film, Paul Watson, who is the founder of Sea Shepherd, is involved in stopping these people in Costa Rica from shark finning, and he tries to publicly arrest them, and he's working for the Costa Rican government. And then it turns out at the end of the film that the Costa Rican government arrest him and try and get him done for ramming their boat and trying to get them. And he was working for the government, so they paid him off, and they were trying to... It was very corrupt, and I was really into that sort of corrupt... world. I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, trying to find out everything. So when I saw that, I was like, I'm on board. Like, I want to help this dude. I want to help this organization. They're doing amazing things. But then I didn't know where to go. I just was like, oh, cool, Sea Shepherd. Must remember Sea Shepherd. And then the first date of that tour, there was a booth at one of the shows, like, that had just been set up, and there were people there with Sea Shepherd t-shirts, and I walked over and was like...
By chance?
Yeah, just by chance on that tour. I was like, what is this? What, I've just watched this documentary, Sharkwater, please tell me everything about you. And I bought a t-shirt, and then that was it, and I left from there and wore the t-shirt, and then I...
That's amazing synchronicity, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and then I remember being in Bali on that tour, like, after Australia, and watching a couple of documentaries on YouTube while the guys were in the... It's funny, actually. The guys were in the pool. We had, like, a pool for the night because we were staying in a villa, and they were all on mushrooms just in the pool, like, having a great time. And I'd eaten something dodgy, and I had, like, barley belly and was, like, I mean, the worst pain I've ever been in. I remember just sitting on my laptop just in the toilet, just, like, I'm dying. But I was watching this documentary on Sea Shepherd, and I was, like, I can't take my eyes off it. And I remember watching stuff for about 4 hours just going, like, this is just... insane. And then from there I was just like, right, I'm wearing this t-shirt every time I play on stage. Like, I'm gonna wear this, I'm gonna talk about this, I'm gonna get people to our shows, I want everyone to know about this amazing work they're doing. And then our, like, headline tour after that came around, like the one off of for Lost Forever, like a bit further down the line, and I'd organized a table to be at every single show of the European and UK tour, so there was Sea Shepherd representatives at every show, so that they would be able to speak to kids like they spoke to me and got me excited. And then after that, they raised so much money that they asked me to be an ambassador for the UK, and I was just blown away. I was like, this is great. Like, I'm so flattered. And I remember speaking to the guy, being like, I don't need to be an ambassador. I was like, I don't want to make anyone in Sea Shepherd be like, who the fuck is this kid? And he was like, no, like, having ambassador on your name and us having an ambassador is just gonna have our name spoken about more, so it's a good thing. I was like,
yeah,
it's like, oh yeah, it's cool, like, let's go. And then from there, it's just been, just everyone involved is just so cool. They risk their lives for animals, and like, that's amazing.
Like, taking a boat which quite often is considerably smaller than some of the whaling boats, and literally parking their boat in front of it while it's moving, it's
unbelievable. It just shows how much they care. And it just really, for me, it just made sense with Architects, like, to discuss it. Like, it was never a thing, like, I thought about, like, oh, like, this is going to be Architects' thing. It was just like, I have a platform to discuss what I think is important.
And I can make a difference to these things.
And I can maybe raise some money to help, and that was it. And to think where it is now, and how much money the band's raised for them, and where the organisation is now, not because of the stuff that I've done, but just worldwide recognition for them as an organisation is amazing.
And it is making a difference, isn't it? It's like, I just saw recently that after Blackfish and the outrage because of that, now SeaWorld's saying that these are the last
orca ones,
that they're going to have in captivity. And
that's crazy. I just never thought that would happen.
Which is an incredible thing, isn't it?
And it just shows, like, the power of humans. If enough people go, this is wrong, it will eventually make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. But then you have situations like in the Faroes where...
It's just never going to stop.
Well, the thing is with that, like, being devil's advocate for a moment, I see that if you're from a place that is so isolated and that is a part of your culture and has been part of your culture for so long that, and, you know... You say it's for food and da 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't alter the fact that you're up to your waist in a bay filled with blood of smart mammals that are watching their family being slaughtered, which is horrendous. Yeah. It's absolutely horrific.
But it's the thing is, and I do understand that, and I do understand the, you know, where it all began. That was life. That was life for them back then. But, like, times have changed. Like, they don't need that anymore. Like, the mercury poisoning that they can get alone is devastating.
I think that's the thing that's going to stop the grind, isn't it?
Yes, it's
the
fact
that in a weird way, the only way they're going to actually stop eating it is because it's giving them neurological diseases rather than the fact.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
That it's not an empathic thing on their part, or or even an ecological thing. It's just like, actually, we don't want to get do this neurons and
I think Alzheimer's. And out there as well now is like they, you know, I had like a couple of good friends of mine got arrested during the Grind, and they were just standing in the way and got arrested for harassing dolphins. They were arrested for Sea Shepherd crew were harassing dolphins.
That was the
that was what they got arrested for, because they didn't know what to arrest them for.
That is so.
Now the thing that shocks me is like the bloodlust of it, like the fact that there's like little kids there watching their dads like hack a dolphin's head off and drag it in by its spine. What do you think that kid's going to grow up thinking is acceptable? Like, oh, what am I going to do when I grow up? I'm going to go and get in a Grind, and they know that the mercury poisoning's there, and that's why now there's like bodies of these being washed up, of like they do the Grind and then they can't eat all of them because they're not allowed to because of the mercury poisoning. So now they're just killing for the sake of it.
Wow.
So it's like, it's really wild. But yeah, you're right. I think the mercury side of it's gonna be the real, like, we have to stop. Because they're so, like, this is our tradition, this is that. And it's like, yeah, well, you know what? Like, 20-odd years ago, racism was still acceptable. Like, times changed. Like, fuck your tradition. You need to change. Because you didn't have a co-op at the end of your street, like, at the end of your lake or wherever years ago. Now you do. Like, you don't have to kill these dolphins. You don't have to kill an animal to survive. You know, I don't want to be too species, like, don't kill fish, but go and buy a chicken, you know. But, you know, they don't have to go out with a big hacksaw and kill a dolphin anymore to eat.
No, no, I agree. And, like, the whole band vegan.
Yeah. For a while, we had a whole veggie and vegan crew. We were, like, we rolled, like, 15 deep with, like, a vegan
Well, I remember crew. When we were in, where was that? Was in Helsinki.
Yeah.
We all went out. That was a good time.
Yeah, yeah, that was good food.
Yeah, it was amazing. But like, how did, when did the change come for that, and that became a thing, or was it not even a thing? It was just something you all did.
It was again just before 100 days. It was that whole period. 100's our lucky number. We it was at the end of Daybreaker when we were in the studio, and I went home for 2 days to just like just go home and chill out for a little bit. Yeah. And I came back and Ali picked me up from the train station. He was like, hey, just so you know, we're all vegetarian now. And I was like, what the fuck? What do you mean you're all vegetarian? Like, it's like, yo, we watched this documentary called Forks Over Knives.
Yeah.
And then we watched another one and now we're all vegetarian. And he was like, I don't want to tell you what to do, but you should, you seriously need to watch this. And I was like, oh, okay, fine, I'll watch it. And then I watched it and was like, yeah, I'm vegetarian.
Yeah, I'm down.
I'm down, straight away. And then 2 days later, you know, 2 days later, Dan and Ali were vegan, and a week later, me and Tom went vegan, and then from there, it was like, yep, we're going to do this. And then Adam on 100 days, like, came on the tour for when Tim left, he like, filled in, and he, like, turned up and was like, oh, so you guys are all vegan? And we were like, yeah. And he was, like, Adam was, like, eating, like, 2 chicken breasts a day, maybe more. Like, he was, like, fully stacked, like, bodybuilding dude. And then we were just taking him to these restaurants, being like, here's a tofu burger, enjoy that. And then by the end of the tour, he was like, yeah, I'm vegan, I've done it. And then it was like, gradually our friends and crew were like, okay, yeah, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, you know? I'll give it a go.
And then, yeah, from then on, it kind of snowballed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to be, do you think that's you for life now?
Yeah, I think so. I think, just don't need it. I don't, I've like, the big thing I worried about was like B12 and feeling weird. And like at the start, I was like taking supplements and like worrying, and like, I'm fine. Like, I haven't taken like a supplement in a long time, and I got my blood checked the other day and they were like, yeah, B12 is really healthy. It's like, oh, cool. Thanks very much. You just have to be a bit wary of what you eat and know you're eating the right stuff. I think maybe one day if I like rescued chickens when I'm older, if they were laying eggs in my garden, I'd probably find it hard to not go like, oh, maybe I'll eat a chicken's egg, but I can't see myself breaking.
Yeah.
I love being vegan so much.
Yeah. I think there's everything that comes with it as well.
Yeah.
And that, which really pisses people off that aren't, which I kind of enjoy as well.
Yeah.
But I'm a bad vegan. I still wear leather. So I'm like, you know.
But I think, but I also have, I just have respect for everyone that everyone has their own things that makes them feel good and makes them feel bad. I think people that don't eat meat 2 days a week are good. I think we're all doing our bit. Meat-free Monday, if everyone in the country did meat-free Monday, it would be so good for our carbon footprint. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, look at just the impact on agriculture and farming for meat eating is crazy.
It's crazy
when you actually look at it, without wanting this to turn into that podcast, but it's
awful. Like in the simplest form, if you put all the gases from cars, planes, buildings, all of that, all the human side of it, there's nowhere even near the amount that's created by just animal agriculture. It's crazy. Like, really crazy.
Yeah.
And films like Cowspiracy are doing like amazing things to discuss those points, and they do it in a really non-confrontational way, which I love. You know, the whole kind of the fact that the dude is not vegan at the start, and he goes out like trying to find out what's going on, and then by the end of it he's like faced with having to kill this chicken, doesn't kill the chicken, keeps it, he's like his best friend, and then by the end he's like, yeah, I'm vegan, I'm fully vegan, like we all need to fucking do this. I think it's the world is heading in the right direction that way. I think there's more and more vegetarians and vegans.
Were you saying about that, that's something that made me think with We've Gone With The Wind, the lyric where it says hope is a prison. And it's like, that's something I was thinking, because it's like the record's so pissed off, like adamant in its stance on all these things, you know, do you think it sounds like a weird, stupid question, but do you think like it's beyond hope?
I do think it is, and I think, you know, the hope is a prison was a line that was said to us by our really good friend John Green, who, like, I guess, like, he's like a guru. Like, you know, he's done mad amounts of DMT with shamans and shamans, and, like, he knows about life, and you can sit there and just listen to him talk for ages, and he's such a beautiful soul. And I remember we were going through a tough patch, and he was just like, my friends, hope is a prison. Like, don't hope, do. Don't hope you're going to get better. Don't hope that that we're going to be okay. Don't hope that this is going to happen. Just say it's going to happen. It's going to be okay. So the line, hope is a prison, is like it is like saying, I hope I get better. Like, I really hope I hope I can get through this. Like, I hope I'm going to be all right. Just say you're going to be all right. Just know deep down that when you say it's going to be okay, I know we're going to be all right. Something in your body, there's a chemical reaction there that makes you instantly go like, oh, I'm going to be all right.
Yeah, because I guess then in that sense, with me saying, do you think things are beyond hope, that sounds like a negative thing. That it's like, you know, there is no hope left. But
there is no hope. There's just actions needed.
Yeah, to be beyond hope is actually is a positive thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
because you've gone beyond.
You've gone beyond the point of like, oh, well, I hope it figures itself out. It's like, no, we actually need to do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no time like right fucking now to do that, because it's like, it's already gone past the point of like waiting and hoping. It's like, the change needed to start yesterday, you know, like Adam said earlier on, it's like the change needed to start yesterday. We're late, you know.
Yeah, and it's a weird one as well, because there's so many different like ways that people are saying, oh, this is going to change for the better when this happens, and like the whole, as like I said, I said to you before we started, I was speaking to Jazz Coleman, like he started saying about the transhumanist movement and about how, you know, like people were being infected with, he really got into some like some deep conspiracy theory type shit where he was saying about, you know, nanorobots. Well, not
nanotechnology.
Well, not about nanotechnology. He said it was something else that was like, you know, as in like the whole kind of almost like the chemtrails thing about, you know, spraying over people so that they're ingesting these like really high levels of aluminium and mercury, as we were saying with the other things. And then you've got someone like Kurzweil, who he is so against, and saying he thinks he's a monster. You know, you've got someone like, have you seen Transcendent Man?
No.
Okay, so Ray Kurzweil is I guess, a scientist who's basically sort of theorizing technology that will exist based on what we have now.
Right.
So in 10 years' time, we'll be able to do this. And he's making patents for technology that doesn't exist yet. So it's almost like he's writing science fiction.
Right.
But then he starts talking about how the singularity is coming, he thinks, in like 2049, where, you know, AI is going to be at the point where it's, and this is where it starts sounding like Skynet became self-aware, which is crazy, because when you start thinking about that stuff, and it just makes you think of these kind of miserable sort of science fiction films of like these dystopian future. But he's saying that really shortly that it's going to get to the point where technology will become aware of itself, where nanotechnology and robotics will become in such an important part of human development that it'll be the next stage of evolution. There'll be no disease, there'll be no aging.
So crazy.
And
but I'm pretty sure Google are probably doing a lot of that.
Well, they are. They are
right now, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Google's doing like Google AI is doing that stuff where they've programmed a computer to play Go, which is like a really, really like a board game, but with incredible outcomes, and it beat the European champion 5-0 because it had sat for a year playing itself and working out every outcome and stuff. And it's when you start to think that technology is getting to the point where we're literally going to be like the mosquito on the arm, you know, that's a scary prospect. Mm-hmm. Because he's viewing it in the sense that, you know, everything's going to work out, because what's going to happen is we're going to develop this technology and then it's going to set things right.
Yeah.
But then when you think about how much people are ravaging not just the planet but each other,
yeah,
maybe the way of setting that right is going, you know what, this is all bullshit. Let's get rid of all that.
Yeah.
And then start again.
We need to take our shoes off and walk through a field and actually just sit there and just be like, this is amazing.
Hmm.
Like, realise that the real simple side of it is like, the most amazing thing is being alive and being present and being in the moment.
Well, that's the thing. Being present and being in the moment is such a difficult thing when there's so much distraction, because it's like, you know, you can despair at the... Like, again, I said earlier about how amazing technology is, in the sense that, you know, everybody has now got a little black tablet that fits in the palm of their hand where they can learn anything.
Yeah.
But obviously the intention is has to be there. Of course.
On the other side to take a picture of themselves and upload it.
Of course, but then we're all guilty of that, obviously. You know, love all that. But it's the mindset that to be present and in the moment, and like, you know, to be in an incredible place and actually just go, this place is incredible, and take it in and view it, like you said.
We said earlier on, like, it's scary how Tom was saying, because like Tom and Dan are doing like insane amounts of meditation at the moment and really like doing amazing things with it
together.
Yeah, together. And we've done it as like band. We've gone to this place in Brighton and like meditated in a room.
I thought you were going to say we've gone to this place where we were talking with alien beings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think
there was always like
but we like, I think
that's coming.
Yeah, Tom was saying like earlier on, like, isn't it sad that we can't just sit somewhere and be by ourselves? Hmm. Without a distraction. Like, humans can't just sit in a room by themselves and be happy.
Hmm.
Just alone. They're always like, oh, there's something I've got to do this, I've got to do that, of panicking and worrying and rushing. And it's like, no wonder we're getting sick, and no wonder we're getting tired.
Because
there's so many distractions out there to take you away from what you really actually put here to do. It's just
exist. Which is what?
And be and love. That's it.
Yeah.
And we're so distracted that we've forgotten how to actually make ourselves happy deeply.
Yeah.
And how to love ourselves and what we have, that we want what other people have. We're so distracted that we want other people's lives.
Yeah.
When we don't even know what's going on inside that person's head. Like, people worship Kim Kardashian and they like want to have her life so much so that there's however many TV shows about her and her sisters.
Hmm.
Is she happy? Is she really happy? Is she truly happy? Or does she just have a lot of money? And does money make you happy?
Hmm.
I don't know whether it does. Because you see a lot of famous people and a lot of rich people that have killed themselves.
You know, you could go, oh, well, it can facilitate all these things, but it generally never does it? It just seems to...
But then you can
see a monk. It turns on a mindset where...
You can see a monk or a Buddha that has nothing, that will sit there and smile for 35 years.
Yeah.
Just straight. And you're like, I want that. I want that sense of enlightenment. Not Kim Kardashian's clothes app, you know? No offense, Kim. you know, we're all one.
And I'm sure she's nice.
Yeah, we're all one, but I don't want
to... I'd like to find out that the whole thing is literally an art piece.
That life.
It's an
experiment.
Yeah.
Mm. Kanye West just turns around and he's like, yo, guys, I did this, I fooled you. Like,
yeah.
This is all me, and you all lapped it up. It was a game.
Yeah.
Like Saw. You want to play a game? It's called Kim Kardashian. Here we go.
I'm sure she's a lovely person, you know? She's brought lives into the world, which I'm sure is going to be a good, beautiful thing. But yeah, it's
Kim,
it's
if you want a Sea Shepherd t-shirt, hit me up.
Yeah, they're wearing a lot of fur as well, right?
Yeah. That's a whole...
I don't get it.
It's a whole different discussion, that, isn't it?
I don't know whether or not I want to get into a certain thing because it's not really my place to talk about it, but it's something that's been obviously sung about in the past that you've covered and stuff, and about, without getting into that, I believe that is also the positive outcome of a negative situation.
Mm.
Put it that way, is that it can lead to a different state of mind, which mm-hmm. I think it's always this talking round things. But do you know what I'm saying?
I think you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
So, but do you think that is something that is, I don't want to say a beneficial thing because it isn't, but is it being turned around in a way that it's?
Have you learnt from it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm into.
Yeah,
say.
I think.
It's not my place to talk about.
No.
If you don't want to.
I think, I mean, I don't need to go into any detail, but I mean, like, there's been stuff that's happened with architects over the last 2 years, 2-3 years, that has made us appreciate things a lot more, and has given us a lot more knowledge on life and just, we again, it's just being grateful and changing our mindsets and stop not putting ourselves down and not worrying anymore. What's the point in worrying because it only makes you sick? What's the point in being stressed because it only makes you sick? What's the point in being angry because it only makes you sick?
Yeah.
Why not just be happy for what you have and be grateful? And I think all of us are in that position now where we're so tight as friends. I mean, 3 years ago, I probably would say I could count on one hand how many times I'd hugged the boys in the band. And now, every time I see them, I give them a hug. And we're always telling each other we love each other and that we're best mates. And, you know, because we were best friends before, but now we're like, we're so close.
That's a true definition.
Yeah. It's like we're now like 24/7, middle of the night, you need anything, I'm your boy.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's actual best friends.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, for sure. So it's like a positive from a strange point. Yeah,
and I think making art is a very positive outcome of
for
that.
Sure. Like this, the next Architects record will be very different to lyrically to what this one is. I think.
Yeah.
I think so. I think we'll. Who knows? Who knows what's gonna happen in 2 years? Like we always say, like, I can't wait to hear what the next Architects record is gonna sound like, because we never know. Tom never knows. Tom always says, God knows what it's going to sound like, and then we're like 3-4 years down the line, like, oh, here's the Architects record,
yeah,
this is what it sounds like. But who knows, maybe it would be more positive. We're all a lot more positive people than we were when we were in the studio for this. There's a lot of dark stuff happening when we're in the studio. The Paris attacks happened when we were in the studio, the Ghost Inside accident happened when we were in the studio, the weather was grey and grim and we were just like heads down, miserable.
Yeah. And I think that shows, but in a
artistic way, it's bleeds into the record.
Yeah. To use that in catharsis is gets bandied around a bit, but I believe that's definitely something you can feel with the record.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the mark of good art, I think.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, because it's like, you know,
it's working for your art, like experience, like knowing that really what music is five people coming together, putting energy into something, then recording that energy and then giving that energy to someone else to experience a feeling or energy from it.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is dark, dark, dark energy that we're going to put into this, that hopefully you will take and be like empowered by it, or just experience an emotion from our energy.
Yeah.
Which is great. Which is really cool when you think of it just like that.
Yeah,
it
sounds a little
bit, yeah. I mean, but I don't smoke weed. I mean I've done mushrooms once in my life.
But I'm not, just not like knocking it, man.
Yeah.
I think it's very true.
Yeah.
I always feel that That's like, you know, like every podcast that I do so far, it's generally 2/3 of the way through. I said this to Jazz Coleman yesterday. Yeah. Generally 2/3 of the way through, it gets to the point where I'm like, so art, where's it come from? Because it's about energy, and it's about harnessing things that are almost an external force. You could look at it in different ways, but like in a Jungian sense, you're tapping into like archetypes, and it's evoking emotions in you, and then you channel that in a certain way, and you make whatever it is you do, whether it's visual art or music or whatever.
I think like in this like simplest way, it's like you still have it, I still have it, and you know Adam who sat next to me will have it, where a band will release a song, and for 3.5 minutes you don't think about anything other than that song, and you smile.
Yeah.
And to be responsible for giving someone else that feeling is so amazing. To think that like Blink-182 for me were like my ultimate favourite band when I was a kid, and I used to wait for the days where the albums would come out and I'd run to Woolworths and buy the records and the singles, and it was everything I ever wanted it to be. Next week Blink are going to release a new song, and I can't wait. I'm so excited, and I know I'm going to be excited when I hear it.
Yeah.
So the fact that people feel like that about our band and can't wait to hear our music and get that same emotion for me blows my fucking mind.
Yeah.
But it's so cool. That's the whole reason we do it, is to give people that emotion.
What are the bands that do that for you now that were maybe, you know, that weren't just necessarily bands that you were into as a kid?
Flies do it for me still. Like when I heard that new song, that Blood on the Sand song, I lost my mind. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Again, a band that's just saying something as well.
Yeah, pre-ordered it instantly. Can't wait to like session it. That it comes out, I think, the same day as ours, I think, as well, which is awesome. And bands like that, and bands that are like,
do you still get transported back to those moments though, like you're saying, or is it just
are you appreciating it
on other levels now?
I still get that escapism, that guy, for sure. Yeah. Like bands like Stick to Your Guns and Shikari, like for current heavy bands, where I'm like, whoa, amazing. Yeah. Well, the other night, Royal Albert Hall, Bring Me the Horizon, I was gone for 40 minutes however long the set was. I lost my mind. I don't remember. I didn't think about anything other than wow.
Yeah, I cried.
Yeah, I cried. I cried. Drown. I cried. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful thing to see.
Unbelievable. And that for me was like, music in its purest form. Just for the whole first two songs, I didn't say anything to Layla. She was sitting next to me, like, looking at me. My jaw was just open, like, oh my God, they've done it.
But then I think that's the amazing thing, is that there's a group of bands that have come through from like all around the world, but the ones that I get a little extra stoked on are the ones from here.
Yeah.
And you guys and Bring Me and Shikari, like, I see these things that the band are doing and saying, and it's just like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's like evolving and watching your mates evolve. It's like so brilliant. Like, you know, watching, we played with Bring Me in like Romford, and now like we're doing the Roundhouse and they're doing the Royal Albert Hall with an orchestra. Like, just, it's crazy, like, how far they've come. And like in Shikari, Ali Pali, my first band played with them in Littlehampton. Like, you know, it's amazing. But they're not just like doing it and then just resting on their laurels. They're like doing it and pushing themselves to do weirder things and experiment and not just release the same record again.
And do it with a socially conscious.
Yeah, for sure. And I think,
as well,
you know, like Ollie, when I listen to the podcast with you, he's really talking and opening up about like amazing things like synchronicity. Like,
it's
huge. That stuff is amazing. And
and I think the more people see, here's my thing, right? Like, I can do a podcast with Chino, and this is not me. Yeah, you know, I don't want anyone to think that this is in any way like a derogatory thing, but like, I can do podcasts with Chino and like Corey and Scott Ian and stuff, but like and Jazz Coleman, but I think it's almost like
they figured themselves out. I feel like because they've had more time with themselves as an artist to know where they are.
Yeah,
whereas I feel like people like me and Ollie are still on this way where we're like learning more about ourselves every day,
and not just you guys, but also your the people that like and love your bands.
Yeah,
because it is a younger crowd.
Yeah,
and they're the people that need to be made aware of certain things.
Yeah,
without wanting to sound in any way dictatorial.
But like cool things like synchronicity, like, is not something that I was massively aware of before, other than just seeing 11-11. But since hearing that podcast, I've seen it everywhere.
Of course.
And then I've seen
other
things.
And as soon as you're
aware of it. Me and like, to the point where, like, me and Tom today, we were doing an interview in a radio station. There was two clocks on the wall. There was one on one side where he was sat and one where I was sat. And I turned around like that to look at the time, and it went 11-11. And on his side, 11-11. And we both went, turned round to each other because we looked up and went, and he was like, and I just went, yeah, 11-11. Yeah. And my phone conversations with him are like, screenshot, like pulling my phone out going, yeah, 11-11. Surprise, surprise, like sent it through. And he's like, no way, I just saw the same thing.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there, like, even to the weirdest thing with the 11-11. Like, I'll tell you this story real quick. So my phone died, like 2 weeks ago. And it was the day before we were going to get our rescue puppy. And I, like, had to go and get my phone. I had to go and buy a phone. And my phone had 3% battery. I wrote down the details I needed to remember. And then my phone turned off. And I was like, well, cool. I'm going to go into town and I'm going to go and get this phone. So got sidetracked. Saw a few people on the way. But made it into town. And I've been walking around town for a while. And I was like, I have no idea what the time is. I had this new phone in my pocket, but it wasn't turned on. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and buy my... I've wanted a watch for a long time. I'm going to go and buy a watch. If I see the one I like, because I wanted this silver Casio watch, and like the old school ones. I don't want a big flashy watch. I just wanted like a metal Casio. So I walk into Urban Outfitters. And I'm like, maybe Urban Outfitters will have it. First thing in there is watch right there. Just there's three watches. And I just pick up the one at the front. I'm walking up to the counter. There's no one in the queue. I'm walking up to the counter, and it goes, literally goes 11-11. As I pick it up, it goes to 11-11. I'm like, what the fuck, this is weird. And I say to the girl behind the counter, I'm like, so weird not having a watch or not knowing what the time is. I was like, is that actually the time? And she was like, no, it's 11:28. I was like, so I just bought this watch that says 11:11. It's still 11:11 while I'm having this conversation. And I'm like, said to her, I was like, isn't life beautiful? And she like looked at me like, yeah.
You're bonkers.
I was like,
yeah.
Okay. See you later. And I was like, I'm that weird hippie now.
No, but
and
the thing is, as soon as you start noticing these things, they become more and more apparent, and they start talking to you a lot more often.
Mm.
And I think if you're doing meditation a lot more, then those things become way more apparent.
But like, even like, Tom went to a meditation thing the other day, right? Went to a retreat in Italy, and
nice.
It was with this guy called Joe Dispenza, who's amazing. He's running this second course, and I won't say where it is, but. Now, because it's part of the story. But we had an Australian tour booked in. It was in a headline tour that we had booked, and we were like 100% confirmed for it. Then Ollie got in contact with me and was like, hey, what are you doing this month? We really want to take you to Australia. And I was like, that would be sick. Let me check with Joey, our manager, and the boys. And we sorted it out so that we cancelled that tour, and we were like, we want to do the tour, bring me, it'll be amazing. It'd be amazing to hang out with them again. And
that bill's sick as well. So amazing. 68 as well, right?
So sick.
Amazing.
So then it turns out that this new meditation course that Tom wanted to go on in Australia is in September, which is the time where we're supposed to be going with Bring Me. And Dan turned around to him and was like, the only way we can go on this meditation retreat is if it finishes on the 10th or 11th. I can't remember the exact date. And Tom was like, okay, I'll check now. Checked, the meditation course finishes the day before the Bring Me the Horizon tour starts in Australia. And we were never supposed to be on that Bring Me the Horizon tour, and now that's happening. Like, I don't know, just things like that are just, you're like, what are the chances of this stuff happening? Once you open your mind to it, you're like, the universe is literally watching my back. Like, it's got me. And you just have to say thanks to it. And then it goes like, here you go, you crazy man. Like, here you go. You love me, I love you. Like, I'll put you back.
Yeah.
And like, really weirdly enough, I'll say one more really crazy thing, right? So me and my girlfriend are like really, like, we like, if we're like having dinner and we're really like sat there like, wow. Like, we were the other day, we were in like our new house, and I was like, thanks universe, like, for this moment, it's great. It's almost like praying, but you're just saying, you're nodding on to what's going on.
Yeah.
So she was in like a rough spot like a year ago. And she was like, she wrote on a piece of paper, like, she was in like debt or something. And it was before architects had any money. And she was like, or I had any money. I don't really have any now, but I would have been able to have helped now. But she wrote on a bit of paper, like, she was in debt. She was like £300 in debt. She was like, I'm in £300 of debt. If you could help me, that'd be amazing. I know I shouldn't be asking for money. And she wrote it away and then threw it in the bin. But she wrote it on a bit of paper. And then a week later, she got offered a job for £300. Like, to, they were like, if you want to do this, like, this is a job, I can help you out. And it's like, from that moment, I was like, yo, like, magic. I'm not in it for the money, but it's magic.
Is
like
real.
The like, yeah. Someone is there going like, it's okay, it's okay. You love the universe. You say thank you. You get what you give. You give out love.
Yeah.
We're gonna give you some back.
Yeah. Now I think that's part of the reason why everything's fucked.
Yeah.
Because people don't get that.
No. Mm-mm. People want to look out for themselves and yeah. don't give out love, but they expect love back. People want to be worshipped without worshipping other yeah. people. Not worshipping other people, like, but loving other people.
Hmm.
People want love without giving it in return, I guess. Heavy.
Yeah, man.
But great.
I was going to say about that. Oh, that's 1:06.
I like that. That's a good time because it feels like it's been like 10 minutes. So, you yeah, know that, it's a good conversation.
That feels good. I was going to say about that Alan Watts thing as well.
Yeah, dude.
Like how did that come about? Because
yeah, and that's a weird thing as well. Like, I'm crazy that you're talking about that because it's... So, like... Alan Watts is obviously an amazing inspirational philosopher and speaker. And
yeah.
He's like helped a lot of us through like some mad times. And, you know, you can take any Alan Watts quote and feel inspired by it. So there's an Alan Watts audio book that Tom had that's like a couple of hours long. We'd done Memento Mori. And he was like, oh, it'd be cool to try out an Alan Watts quote. So he just put it into Logic, just cut out a quote, literally dragged it in first time. That what's there was not cut up or edited. It was just like bang bang put in. And perfect. It was thing. Like it was like Alan Watts was tracking on the song, you know, like there was a microphone set up and he was talking about it.
Yeah.
And the same with the other bit in the song, the two bits in the song, it was just straight in first time, not looked on the grid, just dragged in and press played, and it was the first place and it didn't get moved at all or edited or cut up, or no breath in between was shortened yeah, to make yeah, it fit yeah. like 100% worked. And we were so worried that because we couldn't get clearance at the start, and Epitaph were like, we're not putting this out with it. And we were like, if those bits aren't on the song, it's not a song, like it's not going to come out. That's how much they mean to us. And
yeah,
then Dan got in contact with his son, and his son was like, thank you for continuing to talk about my dad, like this is, use it, take it.
Yeah,
it was like, yeah, it was like, and like Dan, like Tom was on the phone to him and he was like really like stoked that we were doing it and carrying on his work. And Tom was like, he's obviously his son's lived in America, so he has like an American accent, but he was like, I could just tell he was just so calm and nice, and he just wanted us to do well off of it, but not because of it, but just spread the love yeah. that was in the record. I just think it was the perfect point to finish the album as well, just being mindful of death. I could just be like, it's around the corner, we're yeah. all going to end up there.
Hmm.
So just make the fucking most of what you have and just love it, because the worst part of dying is the worrying before it. When you're dead, you don't know you're dead. That's the easiest bit. You're gone, you don't know. But the whole anxiety and fear before it, that's the worst part. So if you just go like, I'm just going to love my life and just love everything about it and just get on with it, then dying is really actually painless.
That's the end. Thank you to Sam Carter. You can follow him online. His Twitter is Sam Architects. The band's Twitter is Architects UK, and their incredible album, All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us, is out now on Epitaph Records. You need to have a listen. It's brilliant. The Someone Who Isn't Me on the next episode is Maynard James Keenan of Pussifer, Tool, and A Perfect Circle, which is very special. Remember, you can keep up to date with the podcast online at Swim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Mine is Daniel P. Carter on both of those as well. If you could leave a rating and also a short review on iTunes, that would be much appreciated. Thanks for listening. Spread the love.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
all your mates know about Swim. I'm out. Peace.